So, folks, on Tuesday, in coordination with Greater New Orleans, Inc., we have the NOLA Coalition segment, and we talk to folks who are difference makers in our community that are involved getting themselves down into the trenches, turning the wrenches, all of those cliches to make this place that we call home a better place to live, work, and raise our family, and we're fortunate for that. And today's guest certainly fills the bill as it relates to that description. Greg Rusevich, who gives of a lot of his time back to this city. He's the chair of the Metro Crime Commission and parish chair of the New Orleans Crime Coalition. He joins us this morning. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Always great to be here.
Greg, so good news in the French Quarter, some high-tech crime-fighting upgrades. Tell us about it.
Right. So, Newell, the NOLA Coalition and the Business Council and the Metropolitan Crime Commission and very police foundation, broad base of crime stoppers, of civic and community organizations have been very strongly supportive of a drone program, specifically a first responder drone program, which is simply a program that responds to citizen calls. And as you know, we had about 300,000 911 calls last year. And the drones allow for a rapid response time instead of the average of a 1 hour response time for emergency calls. In New Orleans, this will give us a 2 to 4 minute response time. Now, it was approved, as you know, last week for the French Quarter. I think the drive here is to make this a city-wide program for first responder drones. Certainly, it's vital that we have them in the French Quarter. That was a positive vote. But we believe that those in New Orleans East, those in Central City, and those throughout the community deserve the same type of response time and the same type of public safety that drones provide, first responder drones that the French Quarter now has. And by the way, Newell, there are about 1,500 municipalities around the country that have now implemented drones, from Atlanta to Memphis to Miami to Dallas to good old Blue California to Virginia, municipalities throughout the U.S. And as you know, close by, the Real Estella program with Jefferson Parish that Sheriff Lupinto has launched has been an incredible success. So. We're really pushing for a drone for first responder drone program. It's absolutely vital for our community.
So I know historically we've had some. We have a new council, but historically we've had some members of the council that have been ambivalent about this type of technology. Some of it were referred to it in a very negative way. Do you feel like that's changed, that there's momentum as it relates to the council and the administration and moving forward with a full-fledged program?
I do think there's momentum, but I think we've still got some work to do. They also have their work to do just in studying what the program actually provides. You know, there's a small chorus, as you know, of individuals in the community that speak against it, primarily for ideological reasons. But the polling, we've polled technology, as you know, Newell, Ron Fauché did some very extensive polling for the Crime Coalition, I think about 6 months ago. And he included technology, even facial recognition, all types of technology, and the polling showed overwhelming public support for all uses of technology. You know, 70% to over 70% public polling support. So I think sometimes the council gets in the sense that they listen to a small group of citizens instead of what the broad public wants. I mean, clearly, these are simply first responder drones that can really improve apprehension. You know, visualize it. You get the 911 call right. You're in New Orleans East. Right away, the drone is deployed, and the drone is simply using its situational awareness. They're assessing the 911 call area where it's been called to. They're sending that film back to headquarters, back to the drone operator and that group. as you know, and then they can determine sort of through situational awareness what the next steps are. So to me, it's, I mean, it provides officer safety, can lead to obviously a specific arrest, higher rates of arrest, and then actually higher rates of conviction, because you've got everything on tape, you're looking at it in real time, and it can actually track the perpetrators. And so I think it's a matter of really informing the council members who are opposed right now, more giving them more information and making sure that NOPD provides all the information they require in a transparent manner, which certainly Jefferson Parish does.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I read a lot of the dailies that I gain access to with the NOPD arrest and their ability to go out and collect video evidence, whether it's a doorbell camera or security cameras at homes, I think in large measure has played a very vital role in the reduction of crime. And then, you know, the utilization of crime cameras as well. There's been this reluctance, as I said, and it's really kind of interesting. And it's going to be, I think, hard to say that you don't want to go there with all of the successes that they've had with just publicly available data that's out there with privately owned cameras. It's almost hypocritical to be against the program now. And, you know, we are making good cases. We're ruling people not only in, but we're ruling people out. So instead of looking for certain people, you know, we're able to determine right away whether or not they were the one. You know, we may have information from someone, maybe even an eyewitness that misidentified someone that we're able to rule out. It just makes it a so much more efficient way of investigating crimes, right? And using it just as a tool, not as the end all to an investigation.
Exactly. And it's an advanced way of using it. It's what others around the country are using as best practices. It's clearly a very critical public safety tool to help. And as you know, you indicated, Newell, it also is really using precision policing. You know, it allows the officers and the criminal justice system to actually see the individual, the perpetrators, you know, and to track them and to monitor them. It's really a form of more precision policing. Instead of throwing some broad net and arresting a whole bunch of individuals, it allows you to pinpoint where the crime has occurred, who has likely perpetrated that crime. And so I think the arguments for it are really powerful. And it's being used. We can look right next door to Jefferson Parish. I mean, Sheriff LaPinto is using, just as you were a step ahead, Newell, at that time on license plate readers, when you launched the LPRs and nobody else was really launching them. You know, the Sheriff LaPinto has done very similarly now with drones, except he's joined by 1,500 municipalities around the country. And so he's using them very, very effectively and is more than happy to provide all the information on his use. So I would encourage those council people that need more information or want to investigate it further, or even those who may question to assess what Jefferson Parish has done with these. And so we're going to push hard, Newell, for a citywide program, which, by the way, budgetarily, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about the city budget, budgetarily, the Metropolitan Crime Commission, good old Rafi, has done his work, and he's assessed that it's about 1.2 million or so for a citywide drone program. I remind you that remind all that the city budget's 800 million. The NOPD about 800 million. The NOPD budget's north of 200 million, and this is 1.2 million for a citywide drone program. If you put that on a decimal calculator, Newell, I can't even calculate what 1.2 million is of 800 million, but I think this should be a pretty clear one of something that you get great return on, and something can really enhance public safety and put an exclamation point on the great progress we've been making on that front.
Well, it certainly helps when you're down and out you know, from a human capital perspective, right? I mean, this is a tool that allows you to start collecting information when you're in, find yourself in a distressed staffing state, and your response time is not the healthiest response time in the country, not by any stretch of the imagination. So when you put all of these characteristics together, it just seems to me to make an incredible amount of sense. You know, it's not originally designed to be that gap filler, but it is in many respects. And if utilized and weaved into the organization operationally in a common sense way, you can leverage that technology a long way while you're trying to fight back and getting the number of people hired, because boots on the ground still matters. It doesn't matter how much technology you deploy, you still need boots on the ground.
Right, and that it's got to go. I completely agree, and thank you for that, Newell. And I, you know, it also obviously acts as a force multiplier, but you don't want to just use it as a force multiplier. You want to also be increasing your, you know, enhancing your recruitment and retention. And I do applaud NOPD. I think they've made really good progress. We track the numbers very closely, and I think over the last 3-6 months, they've made really good progress in turning the corner on the number of applicants they are receiving and on the way they're qualifying those applicants and the way that they're using the academy. So I would expect that the police force will be slowly increasing, but increasing slowly, you know, going over the next 12 to 24 months, certainly, because of that significant increase in applications and enhancements on the background checking process and psych evaluation process. Those have been bolstered. So we're making good progress on the recruiting, too, but that'll be slow go. But I think combined with drone programs and other technologies they're using, such as license plate readers, and then working with great federal, state, and local and regional collaboration, I think we can continue to make really good strides. Boy, but that first responder drone program would sure put an exclamation point on this and really help public safety, I think, citywide, and really give comfort, confidence to those in other parts of the city outside of the French Quarter that want to have the same capability.
Do we have any idea when the French Quarter program may be up and running? Do we know?
I think it's close, Newell. I'm not certain. We will check on that. If I had to hazard a guess just on what I've learned, what I've some conversations with the Police Foundation, with the French Quarter Management District, and with COPS 8 down there, I think it's probably three months. Something along those lines, 3 to 4 months would be my based on what I've heard. I'm not defined on that, but I think it's coming. It's getting there. I think they need a little boost in funding too, to conclude it. But they're just about there. And again, I think a citywide program for next year's budget. You know, as the budget hearings come up, Newell, I think this would be a big win for public safety to get these put this $1.2 million. Put into the budget now that the French Quarter has been approved. We need to take it citywide. It's a small amount in terms of the overall city budget, and it's got public safety written all over it, quick response times, higher apprehension rates, higher conviction and arrest rates. It's all a winner. So we just need to, I think, be all hands on deck to be pushing this over the next couple of months for a citywide program.
Absolutely. Sounds incredible. And obviously, we wish you the best of luck in that endeavor. We know that when collectively all of you guys come together and ladies come together, y'all typically win out in the end. And that's good because it's led to some really significant improvements in the way that we operate ourselves here. And it's been nothing but a plus for the place that we call home.
Yeah, thank you, Newell. I think yeah, when you get the NOLA Coalition, you know, 500 organizations diverse as the city, you know, actively engaged, and you get the Metropolitan Crime Commission with its knowledge and, you know, Rafi Garnacci and the whole team leading it, and you get the Business Council, which are leaders of the business community here, and then all the neighborhood groups and civic groups behind this. Yeah, it's hard to say no to that. That's a winner. It was a winner after Katrina. it's been a winner the last year, and we're on a great comeback here, and just want to keep the momentum. This is a great opportunity to really to really keep enhance public safety.
Absolutely, and the chief will be joining me on Thursday morning, I think at 10 o'clock in that segment. She does so every month, and we'll talk some more about this and hopefully get some backfill on some of the information relative to the French Quarter program as well. As always, totally enjoy the conversation. Greg Rusevich, thank you so much for joining us, chair of the Metro Crime Commission, past chair of the New Orleans Crime Coalition. Have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thank you. Happy birthday, USA. Thank you, Newell.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts about our democracy, about your thoughts about our country, about your thoughts about the celebration, 250 years. Your thoughts about people not wanting to celebrate, they don't feel good about this particular president. But is it just about the president? Isn't this country bigger than just the president? Isn't it about more? It's kind of interesting how people are approaching this issue. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're up. What say you?
How you doing, Neil? I am a real big proponent. I'm a big proponent of the drone first responders. But what's happened to the red light cameras and the speed cameras? Why aren't we utilizing them like we could?
A number of jurisdictions have abandoned their red light camera and speed camera. And for the most part, it's been for economic reasons. I think the public has pushed back because some of the fines were very onerous. And, you know, the enforcement of it was questionable. The technology sometimes was not properly maintained. And quite frankly, at the end of the day, political pressure was put on folks to abandon these programs. Some are still in effect, for sure.
Well, if they weren't handled correctly, you fix that, right?
Yeah, you would hope to get it right in the first instance.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You know, if the police force is messing up, you don't erase it, you fix it. You know, if with any of that kind of stuff, that's what I'm saying. You know, the red light cameras. All right, I didn't run that red light. Well, come in and show us. We got to, you know, look at this camera, like you said. The camera lying or are you? And same with the first response. I love it. I think, you know, if that drone can get there in 2 minutes as opposed to a cop that's getting paid $40 an hour, which he deserves, you know, takes him an hour to get there. I mean, I do not understand. We don't want red light cameras. We don't want speed, but I can have one on my house. I can have, you know, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Don't catch me, catch him.
Yeah. You know, I think for us, in Jefferson Parish, we didn't run that program, law enforcement, that is. That was something that was done at the parish government level. Obviously, it required our participation, and we agreed to cooperate and participate in the program, but it wasn't run by us. The license plate recognition system that we deployed, we had one of the largest license plate recognition systems in the country at one time, and
it
continues to. The cameras can misread plates, especially when people try to manipulate their plates to try and trick the cameras. But you don't use it as a sole deciding factor. It's just a tool to be used. And you know,
just
did we ever make mistakes? Yeah.
Just like the speeding camera and the red light camera. It's not the say-all, end-all. You can go in and fight it in court.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt, Steve. I agree. I mean, you know, these are all tools that help, especially when you having, issues relative to personnel, human capital, not having enough people. All of these things help maintain structure, order in society. Those things actually help in my view with insurance cost, things of that nature. So it's it tends to improve driving habits a little bit. Statistically, a lot of these studies show that it doesn't improve it a lot. In fact, in the red light cameras, what was really interesting is the initial impact on intersectional collisions, there was a strong correlation. And as time went on, it got weaker and weaker and weaker. And very interesting how that revealed itself. So a lot of the data doesn't really support what originally was the main selling point for some of this technology. But, Steve, thank you for the call. Let's go to Pretzel Boy. Pretzel Boy, you're up. What say you?
Hey, how's it going? We do have the greatest country around. I've been around enough to know that. I was in the Navy for 4 years and just recently went to France. That being said, there are issues that we have. Mainly, our local governments are the worst, and people do not understand, especially business people that aren't in the business area, do not understand rules, regulations, ordinances. Go through the list. They got so many names of rules to control you that you can't do business. That is why New Orleans East is screwed up. That is why Hattiesburg has areas where you can't do business. Not breaking laws, just the rules and regulations out of business. Slidell has that. You can't do short-term rentals in Slidell. Why? Because some purple-haired old lady. We live in a world where the local governments are way worse than the federal government. And people that just go to work every day, all they hear is, those rich people that do business. They don't understand that those, quote, rich people that do business aren't doing business. That's why there is nothing new happening in the last, 10 years. Have you seen anything really new jump out at you in the local area? I haven't.
Well, there's been, a series of announcements and some economic development wins. But I agree with your overall premise. I'm oftentimes criticized a lot about national elections versus local elections. In my view, who sits in the office of the presidency is probably not going to move my life one degree right or left.
Right? I agree.
We talk about tax relief. We've argued over tax bills for years in Congress. And then I find out that the tax relief to me was like $310. And
yeah.
I'm like, well, pick a charity, and if I could trade not having to hear about this tax relief for all these years and give that $310 to somebody every year, I would have done it. Because, I'm thinking it's going to have a much larger, we'd have a much larger impact. But the fact of the matter is, you're right, local leadership, local government, electing people that are collaborative in nature, that can bring people together, that can move, your jurisdiction forward, be on the cutting edge, is where it's at. That's where my life is impacted day in and day out. If you just compare us to New Orleans, we get garbage pickup twice a week. New Orleans, once a week. Our water bills, although they're higher than they've ever been, because we're setting ourselves up to create a fund to be able to manage the costly repairs of an aging infrastructure. No, we're talking about in Jefferson where I live.
Oh, okay.
But you don't have that in New Orleans. They're behind the eight ball. They're playing the beggar role out there to try and catch up.
They got a lot of money.
They haven't done it for
years. And it didn't do anything. Yeah, they got all that money from Katrina to fix everything up. That shouldn't be a problem in New Orleans at all. But because they
They don't collect what they're due. I mean, this administration is working really hard, and I think they're going to succeed in changing this culture that we collect what we're due. I mean, that's the only way that we're going to be able to survive. You can't give people a pass for 10 years and not collect their water bills. I mean, it doesn't work.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more on that. It's simple.
But all of these are the local issues that are really impacting the quality of your life and your ability to do business and your ability to do business successfully. Right.
That's more so possible now. You can't fight the city. If you fight them, they will come after you, meaning they will come after you and fine you. People don't understand. There are so many ways the government can inflict pain on you. The simplest one is code. You don't pass code. They can come over to your house. Anybody's house is failing code right now. So if you say something and they don't want to deal with it, they'll come over there and they'll cite you because your stairs aren't right. Your driveway ain't right. You parked in the wrong spot. See, all of that stuff I've seen before. So it's not like I'm making it up. It's just terrible. I don't know how it's ever going to get fixed because the people who have their hand out keep voting those people in. It's terrible. I mean, I've already been put out of business on a couple of businesses because of rules, regulations. I wasn't selling cocaine. I was doing legal stuff, and they zoned me out. And I don't know how it's going to get fixed. I really don't, because there's too many people who are happy with the way the system is, and there's too little of people that can fight back. I'm not a millionaire. I can't fight the government. I can't fight the local people, the local governments. St. Tammany Parish got rid of short-term rentals. For why? I don't know. I can understand in the neighborhood, but like on Ratness Road or Car Drive, you could have short-term rentals there. No. Mississippi, there's legal drinking everywhere. I try to do a daiquiri delivery service, bring it to the house. Can't do it. Why? Other than control, and you can't fight them. I mean, I feel most people just don't understand it. We could be living in such a better sort of lifestyle in the New Orleans metro area. How is New Orleans East so screwed up still after all these years? It's sad. It is so sad. But it's all local government. I mean, I know they keep getting voted in, and the people, like they always say, you get what you vote for.
Well, I hear what you say, but you're not going to like what I have to say. I don't know that short-term rentals is going to be the panacea for much of anything, quite frankly.
I think it's
a Band-Aid solution, and the problem is that you have folks that involve themselves in short-term rentals that are just out after the dollar. They're not out after the preservation of the neighborhood or the makeup of the neighborhood, and it can be a very distracting force.
I've heard
in
that
a neighborhood.
Argument plenty of times, and it's a false argument. There are rules and regulations and laws out there for everyday people of not making too much noise, not doing this, that, and the other thing. But you do have areas that aren't getting built up because there are areas that are kind of distraught, but nobody's going to build them up. And I don't want to, I don't want to name myself in the spot, but because of everything you just said, the idea of building and making the area better won't happen because there's no reason to. And this whole idea that if short-term
short-term rentals becomes the confluence of commercial versus residential property, and that confluence doesn't really work well because it artificially increases the valuation of the property because of the commercial aspect of it, and then you are asked private landowners who may live in that neighborhood are having to pay inflated property taxes because somebody three doors down is running a commercial operation. There's a fairness doctrine there that needs to be considered, that when people moved into these neighborhoods, they weren't going to be facing those challenges. Is there a potential way to work it out? Maybe. There's been a reluctance to do so. Folks are not as eager to engage in the bastardization of the assessment of property at this point in time. And maybe we end up there at one point in time, but right now I don't see that as a saving.
Well, let me say two things real quick, if you don't mind. I'm referring to areas that were considered commercial and residential, which there are a number of them. And also, this is working in other places. The Gulf Coast is making plenty of money off of this scenario. The money comes straight from Airbnb, VRBO, and others, right to the government. It's not like, you know, it gets lost somewhere. Every rental, look, the government makes money, which can take care of
there's a balance of interest. There's a balance of interest always, and I get it. I mean, the lure of the dollar's strong. I get that as well. But there is this balance of interest that has to be considered. You're the one that used Rat's Nest Road as an example, and I know a lot of people that live on Rat's Nest Road. That it's not a weekend place that they go to. They actually live there 24/7, and you know they consider that their home, their neighborhood. So their interest doesn't completely align with some other folks' interests that are using it as an investment property and maybe want to try and rent it out because there is an allure to that, and you can demand pretty high prices. As a kid, we used to rent a camp out on the east. You had to walk down the railroad tracks, you know, out there, and spent many weeks out there during the summer doing that. But you know, it's a different time today. But thank you so much for the call, Pretzel Boy. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Elon University commissioned the polling firm YouGov to gauge public sentiment on a broad range of questions about the nation, including patriotism, civic pride, America's standing in the world, and whether respondents would prefer to live elsewhere. 1,000 adults were included in the survey between April 30th and May 4th, and the survey was released earlier this month. And one of the most striking issues and findings in this survey was that a majority of Democratic respondents, 55%, said that they would rather live outside the United States than remain here. Interesting, because I would suspect that the vast majority of those folks have never even visited countries outside of the United States. So they really don't even know what they're talking about, right? So what is actually driving this? I mean, is this all about, you know, who the president is or who's in Congress or whatever? The administrators noticed that 68% of respondents are proud to be American. 79% believe the U.S. plays a uniquely important role in world history, but many are pessimistic about the health and future of American democracy. In fact, the majority predict that by 2076, the nation will have less freedom, less economic equality, a lower standard of living, and more pollution. And more Americans also believe that technology will create more harm than benefit over the next 50 years. 52% said the U.S. is unsuccessfully living up to its founding ideals, and 30% said the U.S. is successfully living up to them. 73% rated the overall health of the U.S. democracy as only fair or poor. 68% elected officials today are worse than the leaders of the past, and 80% say they at least sometimes feel no political party or movement represents them. This obviously is a sharp divide. And actually, the divide between Democrats and Republicans in the responses to these questions are really very interesting. When you look at the crosstabs of this poll, it becomes even more interesting. Amongst Republicans, 68% said they felt proud, and another 19% said they felt grateful. Just 5% said that they felt conflicted, frustrated, or disappointed, while 9% were unsure. Democrats, on the other hand, only 18% said that they felt proud, 17% grateful. And by contrast, 42% said they felt conflicted, frustrated, or disappointed. And another 24% said that they were unsure. This partisan divide as we approach our 250th birthday, you know, is really interesting. And what's also emerged here on the American dream is that 75% of Republicans agreed it remains attainable for anyone willing to work hard, regardless of circumstance, compared with just 25% of Democrats feel like the American dream is still attainable. It'd be really curious to find out what they believe is standing in their way. I've always thought that I pretty much controlled my future, what I was going to do, what I thought my worth was, self-worth, my level of self-esteem, how I approached certain things. It wasn't born with a silver spoon by any stretch of the imagination. And always thought that I could improve my state by working hard. Pulling my boots on every morning, going to work early, working hard, still doing it at age 68. Getting up early in the morning, reading as much as I can, trying to make sure that I'm on top of the issues as much as possible, in formulating an opinion about so many things that I hadn't even thought about for many, many years, but knew that the only way that I would improve upon, you know, myself, my status, would be to just work hard, to put in the hours, to try and make a difference, give back to my community. I'm just curious what's standing in their way and what they believe that other countries will provide for them. One of the interesting things about World Cup has been others' reaction to what we have here. And we should listen very closely to some of the interviews of the folks that are visiting the United States for an extended period of time to see their respective country's team, their pride, their unity, their belief in their country, standing up for their football team, and their experience here in the United States. Might be telling. We'll be right back. Folks, this July 4th weekend, join WWL for an ABC Radio Independence Day special that focuses on the hero next door. Hear powerful stories from the 9/11 generation of American military veterans, stories of patriotism, sacrifice, purpose, and the quiet heroism that lives all around us. Plus, we'll take you inside Cherished America, a cross-country tour of America's most treasured national parks and monuments, from Mount Rushmore and Devil's Tower to Lincoln's Cottage, the Appalachian Trail, Sequoia National Park, and more. And join us for an American 250 special honoring the heroes next door and the places that tell all America's story, Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock, then again Saturday at 1 and Sunday morning at 10 on WWL. As we come to the end of June, there's a new day that starts for LSU New Orleans. It'll be the first day, July 1st, where UNO, what was formerly UNO, joins the LSU system July 1st, ushering in a new era for the university. We'll visit with Jeanette Weiland, joins us to discuss the historic transition. She is LSU New Orleans interim chancellor and chief administrative officer. And we'll visit with Jeanette. And in the back half of the noon hour, we'll visit with Glade Bilby, president of the French Quarter Citizens and co-chair of Save Our Soul Coalition, Armstrong Park, also commissioner of the French Quarter Management Commission. We'll talk about the Lower Decatur Street businesses saying that months of construction delays are threatening their survival, with some iconic establishments already closing, and is relief on the way. So we have that and more headed your way. Stay tuned. We will be right back after the top of the hour news break. This is Newell on WWL.